This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 437, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to iFanboys Pick of the Week podcast, episode 437. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me, as always, is Paul Montgomery.
Hello, the world.
And sitting in for Jeff Cannata is Josh Flanagan.
It's not funny.
It's a little
the
funny.
The whole show. You know, I make contributions.
Listen, we got Jeff all ready to go back here.
First it was fucking Tom Caters, and no one said anything. And then it was, I don't know who it was after that, but three is funnier than two. So there was a person in the middle, and now it was Jeff Cannata. And I'm here to say, sir, no. Welcome. Thank you for welcoming me back.
We are iFanboy.com, and we like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics, just like this week, where there's a bunch of them.
What one of us prejudiced. Picks... I'm not. What does that mean?
I guess fat people. One of us. No denial there, Paul. No denial. One of us picks the best book they read.
we talk about in the podcast, along with other books that we got the topics of interest.
Dude, are we able to give credit for a joke that's 3 weeks old to let them so that they know that's
the new listeners know you're not prejudiced against fat people?
Yeah, I mean, we just sound like dicks otherwise. We're just assuming that people know.
You sound like dicks anyway.
Well, you made the joke.
Not a joke. I'm pointing out how you're prejudiced against fat people.
Well,
before we get to the show, a quick reminder and a warning. This is a review show, so spoilers. Hey, guess what? Josh has the pick.
Yeah. Can only go up from here. Flash Gordon number 2. Basically, I read a lot of books this week. I'm sure we all did. I read a lot of good books, and this was one of the old standby when you can't think of what it is you want to do is what did I sort of have the most fun with, and what for me what felt the most fresh, what got me out of that stack of comics that I was reading. And at the end of the day, you know, the thing that made me the happiest, I think, was Flash Gordon 2 from Dynamite. This has to be one of my first Dynamite picks ever for me.
Okay.
Jeff Parker writing, Doc Shaner drawing. And what I liked about this is that we're just in the thing and we're spending time with the characters, and I was really tickled and having fun, specifically by how impetuous and dumb Flash Gordon is.
Oh yeah, that's the joy of this book.
I really like the fact that he just flits about through life like a certain former host.
He's
kind of
like
show.
The Tick.
I know I never read much Tick, so.
Well, I didn't either. I just watched the show, but
yeah.
You know, he's very capable physically. He can do things like in this issue he jumps into an arena and fights a giant slug that no one else can defeat, or at least pull the arrow from the back of. He can do a lot of stuff. He can fly planes or whatever vehicle you give him, but he's just not too sharp. Which is fine because he's
not paying attention
because
he's in his own head. You know, it's funny if you say it like that. I can hear Patrick Warburton being this character,
right? So I like this issue more than the first one, which
I was curious.
I famously did not love, but I did like the first issue. I like this one much more.
Yeah, I just really enjoyed the personalities and the of the three characters. I thought they played off each other well. The three protagonists whose name I can't think of. There's
Professor Zarkov, Dale Harden is the woman.
Dale Harden, I remember.
Yeah.
But, the old drunk and the broad.
Yeah, I loved the old drunk too. I liked how he was not helpful either. Like
he's just looking for fuel basically too. Like there's this whole thing where there's a system on this planet, which is basically a feeder planet for the beast men of Mongo. For Ming's army, and they basically, you know, when guys get to a certain age, they put them through this hellacious process and they turn into gorilla people basically and mindless killing machines. And the whole reason that Professor Zarkov is interested in checking out this facility is, oh, maybe we can find some fuel for the ship. And, you know, Flash is having this whole, you know, moral quandary about, well, should we help them? But that would blow our cover. And, you know, but then they're also talking about, like, the economy of the planet. It's like their only.
Well, you know, I mean, and that you're really nailing when you sort of try to describe this and you find yourself saying all these things that are sort of baked into this seemingly simple story. Because it does, you know, it's not, there's no auspices of this being some dark, troubled story. It's relatively light. But when you put it all together like that, It reminds me of the best stuff of Jeff Parker's that I've read. It reminds me of the old Thunderbolts issues that he was doing a couple of years ago, where there was a lot of silliness. Like I remember, the one where they were in the, like Thor came to the women's prison, and there's just dumb jokes on top of other really cool, fun, smart things, and that feels like what's happening here. There's like a lot of different things going on at the same time. And it's kind of like on the surface, it's a little slapsticky, but also there's sort of these social concerns and you know, veiled within this science fiction setting.
I like Governor Drawn, the robot overseer who's constantly breaking down.
That's a great design too.
And like the idea that they're going to take this robot and he's going to be the thing in charge of them, but they haven't put any of the infrastructure in or the resources, and they're just, you take care of it as a robot. And like, that feels like the real world to me very much.
You're right about the tone, because it is funny and slightly slapsticky in parts, but it's also there's a very horrific undertone to the story. And this planet has been subjugated by Ming the Merciless, and they're not allowed to have technology, they're not allowed to have industry. For fun, they shoot these exploding fruits or whatever the flowers they were on this planet on the trees, and And you know, it's not a happy life. And no. So there's that undercurrent of despair to the fun. It's a nice tone.
You know, when he goes into the bug pit, which is gross. He just, you know, he like you said, he figured out how to do it. And he, this looks like a roly poly, and he tickles its belly. It's just so child. It's like a 10-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then I haven't even mentioned it, but I really have always liked Evan Janer's style. Mm-hmm. And I've seen stuff he did before, but it's like he came out of the gate a man possessed on this. I mean, really just good looking, wonderful character work, wonderful storytelling and action sequences and world building and the giant tree ship that's being towed by huge bugs, you know, and this sort of faux retro coloring put by Jordi Belair on top of it. It's just a nice package. I mean,
it's such a great, you know, confluence of creators. Like it's the perfect match of, yep, you know, sensibilities. All three of these, you know, people working together on whatever they would do would be interesting. But Flash Gordon's such a great choice for them, and it is such a romp. You know, it's a really fun book to read. And then you can, you know, dig a little deeper. You can scratch at the surface a little bit and find all these interesting, you know, sort of like the political commentary that's going on. And if you go into, you know, the blue guy, what the hell is his name? The Prince Baron. If you actually, you know, like listen to what he's saying, I'd be curious to see how he proceeds after the cliffhanger in this issue, because how, you know, he feels such remorse for what he's doing to his people. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much allegiance he has for Ming when you really go deep down.
Hardly any.
I think the point is that, like, they have to. In order to survive, he's got to do what they're telling him, but they're a subjugated people. I think the thing that I really like about it is, I mean, it's all written on the page and everything, but that character's posture and facial expression all the times are perfectly projecting the odd position that he's in.
Yeah.
It really is a great bit of storytelling just going on with the way that he stands and his facial expressions and you
he's
know,
almost
that
in like a Lando Calrissian situation here.
Yeah. Yeah, he had no choice. They arrived just before they did. and then just finally the last little artistic flourish, the thing that I think that really sells me on the look of this book is that there's this little bit of rosiness in Flash's cheeks, mm-hmm, which just makes it like that much more charming, I guess. Like there's just that bit of, it just makes it feel like I'm reading a comic book out of time a little bit.
I'm going through the pages here and I'm looking at his facial expressions in the background, mm-hmm, and it's hilarious. It's like looking, yeah, at, you know, like Chris Pratt in Parks and Rec, like just like catching some, yep, kind of stray expression in the back.
I think anyone who is a fan of Daredevil, which came out this week, should read this. It's a very similar tonally, yeah, and also the art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Evan Doc Shaner is in a very similar school to Somni.
Boy, I always liked his stuff, but I'm looking at this book now. I'm like, oh wow, like I think he could be a big deal. Previously, well, I thought he could be a great artist that a few of us like, but probably
that's what
not
we thought
a superstar.
About Chris Somni too. Remember, way back then, we thought this guy's never going to be huge, but we're going to love him. But then he got huge, which is great. Which just gives me hope that guys like Evan Shaner can get huge too, because they're very similar.
I remember years ago having this conversation with Ron, and just like, and we're saying like you know, we know the truth, like this guy's going to be amazing, and just hopefully, you know, everyone else will catch on to this. But yeah, he's, you know, with this and the Superman book, really kind of, you know, blown me away on these, and I just the layouts too. Yeah. It's not even just, you know, the rendering of the characters and stuff. I mean, it's the storytelling. Everything is.
I remember like years ago being in an elevator with Chris Somni, and I don't know if he'd done anything other than what was the, like, he'd done the Queen and Country arc.
In the Queen and Country, he had done a Vertigo Crime OGN.
Yeah, and he I think he was working on what was that great superhero story that DC did that we liked a lot that I can't remember the name of.
Alpha One or something like that.
What was that called?
Character was Alpha One, but
And I remember being in an elevator with him. I was like, you draw my book? He's like, no. And I was like, oh, he knows he's going to be a big deal. That's cool. All right. I was kidding, but he was on the path. And dude, you know, he's got it. And I see that in these pages. I think this is a game changer for Shaner,
mm-hmm,
who's sort of struggled to make his way in the art world. Not among artists. I feel like artists have known it, but I think other people are going to know it now. So I think look out for this.
The Mighty, is that the book?
Mighty sounds right.
Wow.
This week, we did. This week, Forever Evil ended and didn't really, Dick Grayson didn't really die, blah, blah, blah. But what happened in that issue was that Lex Luthor ended up saving the day, driving out the bad guys and also saving Superman's life. So in Justice League number 30, we get the tie-in / aftermath issue of that event in which Lex Luthor is now a hero to the world because he saved the day. And we've always talked about Lex Luthor being interesting because at the end of the day, he's really just envious of Superman. He wants to be Superman, but he won't because Superman is Superman.
I think if there was a world without a Superman, he could be potentially a hero.
Right. So here we have a situation where now he is Superman
mm-hmm.
because he saved the world and he saved Superman. So now so what's interesting about this, what I really enjoyed about Justice League 30, despite the tie-in, is that now we get to sort of explore Lex as hero and not, you know, and all the different layers that come along with that, because the Justice League knows that, you know, what he's really like, and you know, he builds a new watchtower and he invites them all up and they all go up not knowing what's going on, and then he's like, hey, and he's got champagne ready for him and he's ready to be part of the Justice League because deep down inside that's all he wants to be, and none of them are having it, and they put him in Wonder Woman's magic lasso and he says, I'm an egomaniac, and this, you know, all the adulation from the people feeds my giant ego, so I want to keep doing this. And it's a really interesting dynamic now to have him in this position. I mean, obviously it's not going to last, but for now, it's a nice exploration of the character and how he fits into this world. The other thing that happened in this issue was that he has figured out that Bruce Wayne is Batman, so now he's got that going for him. But if you like Lex Luthor, it's a really interesting issue, really good. And going forward, we know that he's going to be placed in the hero role, at least ostensibly. He's going to be in the Justice League on the surface. Obviously, he won't be a good guy, but I like that. I mean, I like that for a little while. I like to see what will happen when Lex Luthor tries to be that thing he always wanted to be, but will fail ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. I like that. It was good. I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I did, but I did. So there you go.
I got to say the cover to Saga 19 threw me off. Because she's basically in a superhero costume.
Right. Well, she's playing one on TV.
No, I get that. But just like looking at the cover, like it really, like I keep looking at the cover and I'm like, wait, is that, no, that is Saga. Like it doesn't feel like a Saga cover, which is fine. I'm just, it's jarring. This is a jarring issue. It very much was.
I think it was supposed to.
And you opened it up and you freaked out.
You know, I didn't, it took me a few seconds of looking at the first image.
The crowning.
Before I, like, I had CRT to look around monitor. And I put things together. And I was like, is that it? Yep, butthole. There's, okay. There's blue everywhere. But savvy comic readers will know that Chuck Austin and Alan Moore did this 30 years ago. So big deal. What up?
Yeah, so the issue opened with a giant splash page of Prince Robot the Fourth being born.
Splash page is kind of an unfortunate.
Is it well, it's not the fourth yet.
Right. Cause
guess it is because we do know the fourth is dead. I forget.
Crocodile nurse. Come
he's
on.
Just, if he's, yeah, no, they do that in this book every once in a while. What if we make that an animal? Okay. And then make that animal look fretful. Can you do that?
This is an odd issue.
It was an odd issue, but it was a jump forward in time and you had to glean everything that was going on because everything has changed in their lives.
I don't mean odd to be derogatory. I didn't dislike it. I like it. It was a little odd tonally. It was a little odd structurally, and by odd, I mean very unusual to the series.
I think they did some really interesting storytelling.
Yes.
There's some, you know, in that opening scene, you know, you have this birth scene, and we're talking about, is the prince really dead or not? Have his people given up on him? And then you close in on this mobile over the baby's crib. And you zoom in to their planets and moons and stuff, and this is a good opportunity for Hazel to start talking about, to catch people up, you know, if this is their first issue or if they need a little reminder because we're on hiatus, that this is this, you know, conflict that's been going on between this planet and this moon and then this other, you know, tertiary planet. And it's just a really nice segue sequence.
And then they specifically, they have her say, you'll catch up. which I think is the best way to describe this issue.
There's a lot of meta stuff in this issue.
And then also just like that's Hazel. Vaughn, and he's letting you figure out what it is from context and everything. Like, it's not a lot of stuff handed to you. And I like that. It's sort of storytelling on the fly. Or it feels that way anyway.
But a lot of this was hinted at or suggested in the previous issue, mm-hmm. as to what they were going to do with their lives. And so they're still in hiding, and Alana has taken up this job, and it's basically this, combination of, like wrestling, Mexican soap opera kind of situation, and
slash cam girl slash
right. And I think, Connor, as you mentioned, there is some meta stuff in here when we have the reaction of the guy watching, sort of a VR style, like you insert yourself into the audience, but you can do that from the comfort of your own home. And having these, jeering trolls in the audience, and Alana can't take it. It's driving her nuts. And so she breaks the fourth wall, basically. And that gets her in trouble with her boss.
I really like that last panel in that sequence of the dude sitting on his bed with the thing on his head.
Yeah.
that is like
a great
really,
cutaway. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like it's in the story, but the way that, how it's set, it's really nice. It's just,
her
super
boss. This is like, it looks like a gargoyle.
Yeah.
Like dressed as Master Splinter. Yeah. That was my rack.
Now lower your eyes to an enemy.
Sorry.
So Alana is acting in this VR soap opera.
Splinter doesn't say that. So
what's the guy's name?
The guy? What guy? In the acting scene?
The husband.
Marco. Oh.
Marco is
Mitch?
Marco's walking around taking care of the baby with a invisible man disguise, and apparently they're headed for a breakup. So
That's crushing. But that's classic Brian Vaughn.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're like, oh, okay, well, they're together, and they just had this really sweet scene where they started to fight, and it was a good fight, like good writing of a fight.
If there's something in a Brian Vaughn book that you like, or a relationship that you enjoy or are touched by, that relationship will be destroyed.
One of those characters will be killed.
I smiled because I was like, I thought about the original pitch for this, the original announcement when we first heard about it, and those promo images, and that idea of Saga, and what a great name for a story, not just about a space opera, but about, a family story, about, coming of age. And you're going to hit those bumps in the road in a family story. It's not just about, surviving the outside world. It's about, maintaining those relationships. And, they could end up what a great commentary. About modern family and everything that you have, they could be split, and they could end up, being angry at each other, or it could be a mutual thing, and that would be very interesting to see.
All of the fibers of your being want you to be like, oh, this is a couple against the odds. You're like, oh, well, the story should show how they make it. And then, as a storyteller, his job is to recognize those things and
have somebody get shot by a sniper
and take away from you what you want or what you think you want, and make that hard. He's very good at that. Always has been, and also like Brian Vaughn is still the master of the single issue as far as I'm concerned. Nobody else even comes close to him on that. So it was a good issue. It was really interesting. It gives us a lot to sort of toy with. And I don't think it's been gone for a while, right? This is the first one.
Yeah, there was a hiatus.
Yeah.
And since it's not in the rundown, and you mentioned Daredevil earlier, there's a nice call out to Saga in Daredevil where he mentions Lioncat when he's interrogating a criminal.
As Matt Murdock reads indie comics.
Yeah.
So I know last time it came out, we spent a lot of time gushing about the Mercenary series.
Yeah, what's that doing back?
This is number 4. And I wanted to talk about it again because I was struck with this in this issue about how great and classic the storytelling is. And I don't know if we got so much into specifics last time as we just yelled at each other about how awesome the book was,
good, I know!
I like the escalating tension and the escalating danger in this particular issue even. This is a very old school adventure story.
I like 1930s Terra Chase.
This team is rescuing a spy, 1930s Terra Chase, so they're on this island and they can't escape because the Chinese army's blocked their escape, so they have to flee with these villagers, but they can't flee with the villagers because the villagers' women have been taken, so they have to go and help the village. Every time they think they've found what they're looking for, they get veered off to another direction. It's sort of classic escalating danger and action in a story, and it's great. It's sort of like
out of the frying pan into the fire, and it's like Flash Gordon in that way.
Maybe think of actually in Temple of Doom, in that Indy lands and he's got to help the villagers before he can help him, and this is sort of similar.
I'm not Skrupu.
And
you will go to Pangot Palace. I don't want it. You will go.
The only person to tell Indy, tell him off. I just loved that. I love that the construction of this particular issue. Like there was they bumped up three missions in this issue basically.
Yeah.
And all the stuff we yelled about last time was present again this issue. It just looks wonderful.
It's cool in totally different ways. Like last time it was this big submarine battle, and now it's now it's on land and guerrilla fighters and.
What a fascinating set, I guess, that they're in, that this time and place in history. Mm-hmm. There's just so much going on that's really interesting, and they're all, for the most part, foreign alien players that people don't know much about, and it's a bit of history that I don't think people know very well, and there's just a ton there to play with, and they're using all of it. It's cool.
I always love that trope of, my enemy's enemy is my friend, so you have this warlord basically that they run into, and if it were another time, another place, they would be at each other's throats, but now we're allies because Japan's got planes coming down at us.
Yep.
And so we're going to work together, and it ends with a great rallying moment. We're going to go save these women, and we've got some new allies, and it's pretty cool.
It can be a bit look at us old fashioned, but I do like, at least so far, that it's a throwback in that you've got this team of protagonists and they have an adventure, and the people around them may get hurt and killed, but the team survives the mission to get to the next one, and it feels kind of classic in that sense, like an A-Team story or something,
or like The Great Escape or something.
Like the main characters aren't going to die necessarily, but I could be completely wrong in the next issue, but I think up till now it just feels like that. The villagers get shot around them or their guy gets killed, but I don't want to see any of these people die. I want to follow them for more adventures.
Now, last week I wasn't here, so I missed the chance to talk about. No, that's true. I missed the chance to talk about this Superman doomed story, which was continued this week in Batman Superman, and I think that was the only one. Superman wasn't out this week, right? So that's the next part.
No, it's just one part this week.
And I've been enjoying it, I liked this. I got to the end of this crossover event. Which is not a thing that's historically my favorite. And I thought, all right, what's the next part in? Let's do it. Now, we've been lucky because they've been through the books that are good.
Yeah,
and next it's going to be in Superman.
I'll read it.
Yeah, no, I'm going to read it. But, it's been sort of interesting and cool, and it's a good premise. The only complaint I have with this issue at all is the stupid crypto, but I think we've been through that.
Yeah, we've been through
that. It brought in stuff that we've already read about, like in the other issues of this. Like they've been building to a thing, with Mongol shows up and all these other characters who I kind of forgot about, the Ghost Soldier and all that stuff. I really dug it.
Ghost Soldier. I dig that name. It's kind of a cool idea. What's cool, what I thought was kind of cool about this was that, it's a doomsday story. And in advance of this, I was like, doomsday, and I thought it was going to be super 90s, and like this is a chance to a lot of creators came up in the 90s and enjoyed that stuff, and even if we've moved on from that, it's always fun every once in a while to look back at some of that stuff and just be extreme. And what's cool about this is that he goes further back than the 90s. The Phantom King, like all the stuff in the Phantom Zone felt very Silver Age-y to me.
I really like the Phantom Zone stuff. I feel like it's a thing that gets talked about a lot. I haven't spent any time there in a while, and I liked their description of it. I liked how it wasn't how it was supposed to be. I liked the rendition of the crack, of them, like they're trying to hold it together and put it back. Just really like Pac is one of those guys who's got he's got imagination to spare, sort of in the vein of Mark Waid or even Jeff Parker. Like they really wrap their minds around these big concepts that work in these superhero books very well. And sometimes it can feel tedious, but when it sort of comes together in the right way, it's really neat.
It's such a great trajectory for this issue and a great structure. You know, we're looking for Superman. We know Superman's in trouble. We're his friends. We want to help him. We're going to go into the Phantom Zone. Batman puts a foot in. It's very cold. It's very uncomfortable. But then he remembers, you know, it's Clark. I got to help him. So he goes through. Wonder Woman goes through. And no, Steel, you got to wait outside. And, you know, if anything bad happens, you got to shut. It's such a, I don't know.
Again?
It's a thankless role, but that's such a, you know, like an action movie trope. Yeah. You know, you got to have somebody outside the portal to make sure that if anything happens, you know, if I don't come out of here in, you know, an hour, you got to shut everything down. But, you know.
Yeah.
They don't like droids in this bar.
Yo, droids. They'll have to wait outside.
Bring back to us the stones. All right. Another Mark Miller book this week. MPH number one.
I had a really interesting conversation with a comic store proprietor recently about Mark Miller, and he brought up the point. He said, I was like, what's going on with Mark Miller? He goes, he grew up.
His writing's a lot more thoughtful than it has been in a while.
I had written the man off entirely, I would have never suggested that he didn't have talent. It was never the case.
See, I don't agree with your mysterious retailer friend here, because he wrote stuff like this a while ago.
Yeah.
That he found a very rich vein.
Yes.
That had a lot of dollars in it, and he mined that vein for many years.
Well, it seemed like he didn't want to do this anymore.
The comics he was writing made a lot of money.
But they weren't for me, I suppose. But the point is, one after another, he has been coming back with new books. Now, MPH is a superpower story about a drug that gives you super speed. It's kind of interesting. This isn't my favorite of the books, but I still enjoyed it. Duncan Fegredo, the other half of what I wanted to talk about this is that Duncan Fegredo is a guy who has been around for a very long time. You can see his work over in the Hellboy books recently and a long ago, Jay and Silent Bob comic book. But there's other stuff that he's done. Like, he's a great, great artist. And I feel like he's not well known enough for what he is. I feel like he's one of those guys who should be sort of considered a master now, and he doesn't do really big stuff. And
I didn't like it in this book. I didn't like the art. That was the thing I didn't like. I mean, he's a good artist, clearly, but I just didn't like
it. When it clicked for me and what worked well, I thought, there's this guy and he means well, and he's kind of dumb, and he's got his vision board, and he wants to really be somebody, but he's also working for a drug dealer, and cuz he's dumb, he gets pinched for it and he goes to prison. But you know, he's like, no, I'm going to work this out, everything's going to be okay. Things start to go wrong, as they do in prison. Anyway, he ends up taking this drug that makes him super fast. Basically, that's sort of what happened. But what I was going to say is, the thing artistically that I really liked is that when he takes the pill, sort of time stops all around him, because everything slows down because he speeds up so much. And I really enjoyed how it was drawn, because basically you've got this one character who is not static, but everything else is moving so slow that it may as well be static. Now, if you think about what a comic book page normally is, it's all static all the time. But he really managed to find ways to communicate what was happening there. And obviously you need the dialogue to show which, you know, that he's moving and what it is. I really thought it was really well told.
You're right. That's a really abstract idea.
It plays against how a comic book page normally works, which is to show things statically that are supposed to depict action. Like, if you were ever to write a comic book script, you can't say he is doing this. He's in the middle of an action, you know, because they can't ever be doing anything. They can only be doing one thing. You can't show any kind of transition.
What would normally happen in the gutters.
Yes. Yeah. And it worked. Like, it was complete. I was not confused. It was completely communicated. And also, this is a concept, the super speed concept, where you reverse it instead of showing the fast thing blurry. You see everything from the fast. I love this concept. Like, I always find it fascinating to see what it is you would see through Barry Allen's eyes.
Mm-hmm. See, I wrote an article about this a long time ago in iFanboy about the depiction of super speed, and it always bugs me. And this is the way that this kind of portrayal bugs me, because there's multiple ways. Like, how would super speed work? Do you process information quicker? while you're moving fast, so you know you're still moving quickly? Or is it like this where everything else has slowed to a stop and you're walking around as normal, which is fine, except if you're a speedster running from New York to LA, but you're walking as running as normal, mm-hmm. to your perception, you're running for 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't really work. You're hungry, the way you get that tired. It doesn't really work for me, the idea of speed as the world slows down. Great, but it's great for me running across the room or running down the street. But well,
the way I
run from here to San Francisco, it's going to take me a month.
The way that I always looked at it would be through, say, Barry Allen's eyes. This is not a superhero. He seems to be a super criminal. There's a whole backstory going on. This is just sort of the teaser part. But the way I always looked at it is that along with the power comes a sort of
responsibility.
No, non-fixed temporal sensation. Like the way that he experiences time was not be the same as ours. Like that's sort of part and parcel of having that power, and that's how you explain it away. It's like Back to the Future. This kind of conversation is almost the exact same thing. It's very related to having time travel conversations because when you start to pull those threads, like they always say,
about how you experience things when you're really hopped up on adrenaline.
Yeah,
that time your perception of time does change. So it's possible. It just seems to me
perception was totally.
This is
a
way of problematic because of that. But you know, that's in mind. This is the geekiest thing conversation we've had.
Well, you know, but that's the thing. Like every once in a while, it's fun to do that.
It is,
and
yeah.
This one doesn't have to be. You know, you can say, well, I don't like that. What happens in the Flash? But this is some other little story that somebody's telling, and it's interesting to me. And it really is. I think it's like Back to the Future, where if you try to work out the math of the time travel, then it falls apart and they say never do that for that movie.
Right.
You know, just let it be. And I think time travel works that way. Superman's super strength works that way.
Are you saying that the Back to the Future doesn't stand up to scrutiny in terms of its time travel storylines?
I believe I could go that far as to say that.
That's heavy, man. Heavy.
Why do you keep saying that?
Connor, if you were to want to buy a time machine, where would you go?
Are you saying they have time machines on Amazon?
Might have Apple-branded time machines, maybe. I don't know.
Well, you could go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you find the Amazon portal, which helps us take a little piece of the action, pay for the website, pay for the server costs and all those things. And if they have a time machine there, you could certainly buy it. I don't know if they do. Paul says they do.
Maybe in the marketplace. I don't know.
What I would say, if you're a fan of good comics, is to buy the JSA Omnibus Volume 1, which I purchased this week from Amazon. It is only slightly smaller than the Amazing Spider-Man omnibus.
Wow.
And it's quite a value for your dollar. It collects the 1999 first series, Jeff Johns, James Robinson, David Goyer written. And Volume 2 will collect the remainder of the series, and I can only assume there'll be a Volume 3 with the new series. But great, great old stuff.
I'm going to wait until that one.
I was looking through it, and the first issue is drawn by Michael Lark, actually.
Oh, yeah.
But this was a great series. I loved this JSA series back in the day. This was the formation of that, new team had the new Sandman. And it had the girl. Black Canary was on the team, but it had.
It was a weird costume, Black Canary.
Star Girl. Yes. Sorry, I'm looking away. And then also on the cover is Jack Knight from Starman. So it's a great series if you're looking to recapture that glory from the early 2000s. That was one of the better series coming out. So do the JSA Omnibus Volume 1 is my recommendation for great comics on Amazon. Also, ifanboy.com/registration. That's where you can help us out directly. $3 a month or $30 a year that you can become a member and help us out. Keep everything going. Keep the lights on. Keep Josh in booze. You may not have known this, but second kid has driven him right to the whiskey bottle, just like a stereotype.
It's not. I just need a little help. I just need a friend.
So he'll help us out by going to ifanboy.com/Amazon or ifanboy.com/.
If you type in time machine,
if there's one in there,
you get a lot of books and movies that are based on H.G. Wells, like the forgotten Simon Wells time machine film. For example, with Guy Pearce, and his amazing cheekbones. Also, you can get yourself a backup device for your Apple computer. You can get that.
Perfect.
Basically, it's just Hot Tub Time Machine. Excellent film. Let's see. A movie called Time After Time. Basically, you can get depictions of it, but not necessarily a device.
No cosmic treadmills?
No, there doesn't seem to be anything that will actually let you manipulate your place in the continuum.
You should get one of my favorite time travel movies, Frequency.
Yes.
With Dennis Quaid and Jesus.
Yes. Really good movie.
Jesus is in that?
Yep. Jim Caviezel.
Oh, sorry.
It's 2 weeks in a row on that reference.
I think we can keep it going.
Josh.
How is Invincible 111?
11111. I feel like we've done a couple of epoch changes in this book recently.
Mm-hmm.
Although I can effectively say that this one said, what if we take some of the things that we do over in The Walking Dead, limb removal, and we do it to characters who you know and love here who you're not expecting to have limbs removed? Yeah, a leg is torn off of one of the main characters.
How do you feel about that? Well, we've had that kind of...
I really don't think you're going to be expecting the person who got their leg torn off here, especially in the state of that person.
Okay. I'm saying is you had a main character get their face punched in, like their head punched.
I don't think he did a thing in Walking Dead once that was like this.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best I can do with this. It does almost feel like too much. Like it doesn't. It's interesting because this used to be the book that we would say, like, if you really like what's happening in Ultimate Spider-Man, you like that kind of superhero story, that's what this book is. And this book is not that any longer. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's definitely changed. One of the main characters is now officially, like, the bad guy, who was not a bad guy before. If you're talking about throwing in a character way, way over his head again and again, they've certainly done that to Mark. They've definitely sort of keep upping the stakes. Another main character died. It's definitely a change. There's a thing going on. So it was interesting. I can tell you if I really like it was well done and everything. I don't know if it's exactly my favorite thing now. Very action packed. It really has gotten to be a quite violent book, in general.
And it started very, violently.
Yeah, I know, but they've always been
sort of like Capri Sun pouches filled with plasma that just gets pounded on.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. So I don't know. I'm not sure if this book has gone off the rails or if this is just where the rails went, like the Harry Potter stories, like it's just going to keep getting worse.
Right.
Not worse in a quality way, but just in the sort of
in a violent way.
How bad it gets for everybody. Anyway, that's my thought.
I wanted to call out X-Men 14 and Uncanny X-Men 21 this week for really top-notch art. Uncanny X-Men featured Chris Bachalo, and there's a couple of really stunning sequences in there, as there usually are with him. But X-Men 14, which up till now this series has had more of a, I don't want to say cartoony style, but it had the a bit more exaggerated style of that husband and wife team, artist team. Anyway, this was drawn by Clay Mann, who was a bit more grounded, Michael Lark-esque style. And I really liked the way this book looked. I actually didn't want it to end because I was so enjoying the way it looked. So check out X-Men 14 and Uncanny X-Men 21 for some really great art this week.
Cool. You may have – I'm checking back in on the Unwritten book, which was stopped and then started again as Unwritten Apocalypse, and it's the fifth issue that came out this week. I think a fan favorite, one of my favorite sort of characters who keeps popping up is Mr. Bun, who is the very angry bunny character.
Everybody loves Mr. Bun.
And you basically are spending some time with him and getting to know him as he's a murderer, and there's just some really interesting storylines to go through. It was a good issue, and I feel like I'm sort of back on track with it now. And I'm glad that it's still a thing. I really thought it was wrapping up and it was going to be over at a certain point, but now it feels like they've extended the runway for it. And like, I think this week there were three Vertigo series that I read that came out, and I was like, okay, this is a little more like things used to be, like they were long running stuff. So that was nice. That felt good a little bit.
So a couple quick things about Thor, God of Thunder, number 22. Continues to be a really great book. I think we mentioned, did all three of us choose it as our Marvel book that we would, if we could only buy one? Yeah. The Minotaur thing continues to be completely crazy and over the top, and I love it. He has a Minotaur, license plate, and that's pretty great. But the big thing, other than the Thor girls, which are awesome, they should get their own, limited series or something. Or a one shot.
Chance that'll happen.
All Black the Necro Sword is back.
Yeah.
From one of the great modern Thor stories, The God Butcher. Old King Thor goes into a black hole to retrieve Gore's sort of like a symbiote that he had. It was like this hate armor that worked kind of like, you know, like Venom basically, but it's all down to the sword. And this is his last ditch effort to get back at Galactus, who is just laying waste to the earth.
I thought this was another, I mean, talk about a great art this week. This was beautifully looking issue, especially the Minotaur and his troll buddies.
The trolls are great. The trolls are so Frazetta. They're so good.
Yeah. And also I enjoyed Thor's disguise, which was basically a Dr. Doom cloak.
Yeah.
No one will notice me just like this.
Apparently this shall work.
I think whenever they do the flying car thing, the shield flying car, it tends to look awkward, but Ribic managed to make it look kind of dope, I thought.
He should just draw more trolls into the book.
The trolls look pretty awesome.
You were going to say dope a second time, weren't you?
Pretty dope.
Pretty fly.
Trolls are dope, man. Pretty, what do you want? They're dope.
Sweet. Pretty dope. Rad. Bitchin'.
BBRD Hell on Earth 119. This I think it wraps up this storyline drawn by James Heron. Really is one of my favorite artists working today. Is a guy that just can draw chaos and monsters as they go into this BPRD team goes into Manhattan, which is just completely way worse than in DMZ. I mean, it's in bad shape. And there was this sort of huge knockdown, drag out fight between Liz Sherman, who once again was impetuous and burned a lot of things and found out that it probably wasn't the best way to go. And I think it's the Black Flame who's sort of been this character that's been in there all along. I don't know. I got to say, I admire their stick-to-itiveness. Like the world just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. Whereas before, it was a little like a Ghostbusters thing.
Yes.
Where like there were these people and they went and they took care of things and everybody around you was normal. Like the world just really, it is hell on earth. Like it's all gone to hell and you just gonna wonder, well, where are they going to go with this? Like they can just, it doesn't seem to be any reason to keep doing it. Anyways, at times the middle of this miniseries felt a bit aimless. And I think I liked the ending. I thought it was good.
I need to get caught up on all of this because I lost track at some point when I felt it was meandering, but I miss reading BPRD so much. So,
and that's the thing. Like they're really interested and they keep, one thing they've done all along is they keep adding interesting characters and because of the nature of superhero comics elsewhere, when a new character shows up, you kind of think, oh, they'll be around for three issues and then we won't see them again. But in this, like they're there, that Russian guy, Joseph,
right.
It's spelled with an I, you know, like he's part of this now. Like it wasn't a guest appearance. It was, he's joined the story or this girl Phoenix who can predict the future and has a Rottweiler. It's interesting. It's like, it's, you know, they have it down. Who's the Nazi guy with the clockwork sort of innards and the creepy face?
Oh, from the movie?
Yeah. Well, no, in the movies, in the comic books. I can't think of his name, but he's been in like the Hellboy since the very beginning. He showed up right at the end of this. And he's just menacing. It's really, really interesting.
Damn,
he's got a head in a jar. He doesn't talk. He looked really good in the movie. He looked just like the comic book character in the movie, and he's creepy. And when they stab him, sand comes out.
Right, yeah.
The hell's that guy's name?
He's Fandy.
I'll look it up.
The story is like 18 years old now, so I can be forgiven.
This is not a good week for our memories.
Cronin? Listen, yeah, I think that's right.
Cronin.
Listen, either way, my memory's never coming back. So if you've been watching the show, you go, boy, I really don't like how he can't think of words. Like this is how it is now. And if you think you don't like it, you can imagine how I feel.
Those are the books that we wanted to talk about. Go to fmboy.com/comics to talk about those books, talk about other books that came out this week, talk about anything you want over the comments section of the show.
In which Josh says, you know what? Go screw.
Go screw. Let's do an audience question. In fact, Jason writes and says, do you ever feel a sense of, for lack of a better term, obligation to support indie books in issue format? Every week at my shop, I find myself thinking long and hard, maybe just a few hours or so, if I should pick up that new Image number one, it looks promising. I wait for the trade. For instance, I loved Scalped, but read it in trades and wanted to do the same for Southern Bastards. Now I know I'm not single-handedly supporting the whole industry, but for creator-owned books, I know every sale counts and ensures that I'll eventually get the trade that I want.
You know, I thought this question was interesting because I think we're seeing a bit of a paradigm shift in the world of what we consider indie comics. Because we don't call them indie comics anymore. We call them creator-owned comics.
That's true.
So that's very different.
Yes.
So whereas, you know, in the past, I would have said, yeah, you should probably. Like, I don't think that these books done by very big-name creators at Image, for example, are in much danger.
Some are,
but for the most part, I don't feel like you necessarily have that responsibility to feel like you were the one carrying them. Maybe some of the smaller ones, yes, but you know, if you don't feel like buying Starlight and issues, I'm thinking you're going to be okay waiting for the trades. Southern Bastards, I think you know, like it just clued me into the fact that things are different than they used to be. But now at the same time, if you want to, it's oddly enough, if you go over to Vertigo and you take a book like that, the Royals Masters of War, which you've been talking about for a long time, really, I think those issues count.
Well, it's a mini. It's always going
to
come
out. Yeah. Well, that's true. I forget that that's what I would just, I want it to be more than that. So I keep forgetting. But a book like that, you know, something that's sort of less well known, more under the radar, but like a lot of the, like those Image books, they're like big hits. They're big hits in terms of, you know, big two numbers, really. Whereas at this point, like something like BPRD, maybe that does make more sense to buy issues because those numbers are kind of scary. I don't know. What do you think? I'm making this up.
I don't think anyone should have any responsibility to cover business up.
Are you a libertarian in comic book sense?
No one has any responsibility to make sure a business survives other than the business people who run the, run the business.
But I think that the responsibility in a comic book reader comes from the idea that they want the thing to continue and what is the best tactic for
them.
But
there's also an institutional pressure that's put on the consumer in the comic industry that I don't see anywhere else.
I'm
sure it exists, but I don't see it anywhere else in my life that blames the customer for everything
and never the business people.
I don't get blamed for buying my jeans in a store rather than in some other store.
That's not true, actually. I mean, like,
I don't get blamed by the people who run the store.
Jeans, that's fine. But like it happens in smaller subcultures. I know that, like, if you were to look in like in the bike subculture, there's a big push towards, just like in comics, you know, making sure people want you to buy stuff from your local bike store as opposed to Amazon or another discount retailer. Because the margins are small and the culture is small. So that exists in a certain way. In that way, there's that guilt aspect of buying things. You're not just searching for the best price or whatever. But that more has a little to do with sort of local economies and keeping things going like that. Just like comic shops versus digital, same sort of deal. But in terms of content, I think that it's a good point. And I never liked that. I don't like guilt as a way to buy something. But it's reasonable if you think you like something that not a lot of other people are liking, you can consider the best way for you to keep that going. I guess.
For us, I think more in terms of what we can talk about. You have an opportunity. Yes, you know, Thor is probably not hurting for anything, but we love it that much. But then there are other things, like I mentioned last week. I'm going to continue talking about Stray Bullets Killers for as long as I enjoy it, because I don't think it's getting quite the attention that it deserves.
And that's a good example of a book that eventually it's going to have to make enough money or they're not going to be able to keep doing it. Because that's the only thing that he's working on. He's writing, he's drawing it. I mean, he may be doing other things, but in order to keep it, you've got to, or, you know, a really good example. This is actually interesting. Terry Moore, who's like the last of the indies.
Yeah.
He's not, you know, when you think about the 90s and the early 2000s, there were all these really big real indie success stories, meaning they did everything themselves from printing to Cerebus. Shipping. Bone, Cerebus, Strangers in Paradise. There are other examples. But everybody, you know, Jeff Smith he's out. He's not doing that anymore. Dave Sim is out. Terry Moore is continuing to work through the same structure that he worked in when it was a different world. And you can, if you look, read his stuff on Twitter, like, it's not working the same way. It's really hard.
It's a different world. He hasn't adapted to that world, and he's having a hard time.
Yeah.
He's living in a world where most of the audience for indie books or creator owned books, however you want to call them, are trade readers. There's an increased issue number, but most of those people are trade readers, especially his audience, which was you know, raised on those collections of Strangers in Paradise. And now everyone's waiting for Rachel Rising. I read Rachel Rising in trades. Mm-hmm. Everyone, you know.
And the fact is, I don't, and I mean, this goes to what the question's asking. You shouldn't feel bad about that.
No.
You're choosing to consume it. Now, is it possible that if everybody did that, then you wouldn't get any more trades? Yes, that could be a possible effect of that. But like, I was thinking about, like, why doesn't Terry Mortis go to Image, where he's got an infrastructure, he doesn't have to worry about that stuff. But he was brought up in what was a different time. We don't have that anymore. I think the other thing that comes out of that is that if I was to ask either of you right now to tell me an indie comic book series, true indie, somebody doing it on their own, something super small press.
Self-published?
Yeah. Or even like small press, like a series. Can you name one?
That I read?
Or that anybody is talking about?
Copra.
Copra?
Copra.
Copra. Yeah. What's that?
Michael Fife. He's the guy who's doing the Ultimate book, or it's like the...
Oh, right.
And he's doing this book, and he sells it. It's like an Etsy store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's not... Super,
okay.
But
No. What I'm saying is that's not what Josh is talking about in terms of... When Strangers in Paradise came out, that was a book the industry talked about, or Bone. You know, Copra, I know because of a couple of people in that.
You're talking about popular. I thought you just meant
that they can actually survive. There's good things all over the place that people don't know about, and that's fine. But like a real series that's a regular thing that people somebody's doing their own, like it doesn't exist in the same way. Like people like things like that get kickstarted now. They get paid for ahead of time. There's not. That Jeff Smith, Terry Moore, ethic, because there's not an audience, there's not a market for it, and that's a huge change. It's really, you know, now there are like anything like that is going to be something like a webcomic, which is super interesting to me that we've seen such a big shift in the last decade. But there's no series like that. Anything like that that has a hope of surviving is pretty much going to take it to Image. Maybe Oni.
Or Kickstarter.
Yeah. And Kickstarter, though, they're not going to mostly end up doing issues. I mean, they kind of, I guess Comics Tribe is close to that, but they pre-fund everything through Kickstarter for the most part.
It's a different environment business-wise.
It is.
And Private Eye is like a completely unique beast, too.
Exactly. So, that's what you're seeing is different people sort of poking. Like, it's almost like everybody's collectively given up on doing independent direct market issues.
And black and white, too.
Yeah.
You talk about Cerberus and Strange in Paradise and Bone. Those are all black and white comics.
Yeah, I think digital has changed that, whereas people, like, they don't need to be black and white because they don't necessarily have to print them. And if they do print them, then they can raise the funds to do it later.
People won't buy them either.
Yeah.
And which is sad because I remember being in a comic shop and a kid saying, you know, where's the color version of, you know, The Walking Dead or whatever? And
then they did it.
You always hear, you know, Gabe Hardman talking about, you know, I wish there was... That black and white wasn't such a niche thing. That there should be as much of that as there is color, because there's.
I wish they would let Gabe's. I wish that all of Gabe's stuff could be in black and white. And I would be like, at least have the option. Mm-hmm. Even like Chris Somney. Chris Somney stuff is.
Josh, some companies should allow you to swipe the page and remove the color and remove the word balloons and see the pencil art.
Yeah.
Some enterprising digital company should do that.
Anyway.
We got another audience question. Quick one. We have a bonus one. Steve from Maryland. This is for Josh, basically, but we can all chime in. What's the verdict on the new 3-minute trailer for NBC's Constantine?
Now
Paul and I discussed this with our good, good close friend Jeff last week.
Oh, I miss Jeff.
So this is mostly for Josh to discuss.
Just a really great guy.
Josh, who is a big Hellblazer fan, as everyone who listens to the show knows. What is your take on the Constantine trailer, which you did not watch until just about 48 hours ago?
Yeah, I was on a business trip last week, so I kind of didn't have a chance. And then I was like, all right, I got to watch that. I think somebody sort of like linked it, and I had like the right moment. Because I'm not terribly looking forward to it, I guess, in a larger sense. I did, however, on the plane, read a crapload of Garth Ennis Hellblazer, and it was still awesome. Now, I hadn't even gotten to the Steve Dillon stuff. Anyway, I thought it was really... interesting. And I tend to not watch any of these TV shows, but I thought it was much more spot on than I thought it was going to be. Paul, you said something about him looking like a cosplayer. Mm-hmm. And I think when I looked at like how perfect his tie was compared to like a drawing of it, I think that's a very apt description. And then I had pointed out that his coat wasn't long enough. And at some point during the trailer, they pull back and it's like just past his hips. which is weird.
And before anybody writes in, I have nothing against cosplay. I'm just saying there's a, you know, it doesn't feel authentic.
It feels like play acting. Right. I suppose. I thought it was really interesting that his accent was I think it was a Liverpool accent to a certain extent. It was not a London accent. It was definitely a more regional accent. And if you're British, you're going to know more specifically. But
my pal Jay, who lives in Scotland, is from Northern England. Said it sounded a bit Welsh to him.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like straight up Liverpool, but it was definitely a bit of a regional thing, which is interesting because you know, he's supposed to have a Scouse accent. He's not, right. You know, sound more like a Beatle than like Jason Statham, basically. I guess is the point. And in my head, I always hear Jason Statham.
How awesome would Jason Statham be as John Constantine?
I don't know.
What do you? I think the big thing. What do you think?
Well, he is Welsh. Matt Ryan is Welsh, so that's why he's got an accent.
Sure. What do you think of the idea of giving him a companion? Basically, it's sort of like that Doctor Who setup that he has. You know, this person that he's shepherding through that world. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a good idea if you're restructuring something for a TV show. He's always had a companion. You know, he's always had Chaz, who's sort of there.
He's in the show too, Chaz.
Yeah, but you know, maybe the companion will sort of share some of that what Chaz would have normally been doing. I think. I mean, it looks a hell of a lot more spot on than that movie did. The movie actually wasn't that bad. I thought, you know, the only thing that stood out for me that I really didn't like, because I was like, wow, they're really actually doing it, and I thought there's no way this is going to last. But there was a bit where he basically more or less turns to camera and he has a moment of self-doubt. Like he makes like a joke. And I was like, John Constantine would never do that. Like that was for me the fatal flaw in it. Because he's not self-referential and he's not going to self-doubt like that. Certainly not out loud.
Yes, but would John Constantine do it?
John, who?
John Constantine wouldn't, but John Constantine might.
I don't know. The funny thing is everybody writing the current DC version of Constantine grew up on the other version. You get the sense like they secretly wish they were doing that, but they just have these notes and stories that they have to deal with. So that, I don't know, it's weird. It's a very strange, I think it's a very strange character to bring to the mainstream like that. I would be shocked if it lasted more than six episodes. Well,
they're playing on the popularity of shows like Grimm and Once Upon a Time and Supernatural and these, you know, There's this small niche of shows that fit that mold that are popular enough on network television.
Even like Once Upon a Time.
Yeah. You know, and now network has the ability to sort of make a show that looks like that in a way that makes economical sense.
Right. So we'll see. I'm going to watch it.
Really? I didn't watch it and be like, oh my God, I can't believe they finally did it. It isn't that. But it's really interesting.
I think we're all going to check it out. I think for me it's one of the less enticing ones out of the big crop of things coming this year.
You can look forward to Josh's weekly recap podcast every week on iFanboy.
No, can't. I just keep watching The Wire over again. That's that's all I do.
It's not a
bad thank you, Steve, and thank you, Jason, for writing in. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Leave us a message at 888-FANBOYS, 326-2697. Tell us who you are, where you're from. Keep it around 30 seconds and get your question on the show. Paul?
Yeah.
Paul, we got a podcast coming up.
We do. We got a podcast coming up this weekend. We're going to check out X-Men Days of Future Past.
And actually, it's in the past. If you're listening to this show, it's already come out.
That's right. But we haven't seen it yet, so we don't know.
We haven't seen it yet, but with the show is what's happened is there's time travel. So you have heard the show, but we haven't done it yet.
It's heavy.
See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's heavy. So listen to that. I'm checking out for. I'll be behind this show on the feed.
Yes,
or on the website.
Also, I just wanted to give a quick plug for Sunday Conversations over on CBR. Did a really good one this week with Jordy Belair. Talk about color. Find out where the color purple comes from. Which is kind of interesting. So that's.
I thought it was a novel.
Red and blue.
It was adapted by Spielberg.
It has to do with snails. But anyways,
mix red and blue together to get purple.
Sure. So that comes up.
Have you checked her? Have you checked any of these facts? You just letting her put them out there.
It sounds right.
What kind of fact checking do you do on Sunday Conversation?
None whatsoever.
You just let people blabber on about whatever.
You just take it for the truth. I don't know.
Why isn't it about comics talk? I just come up there and I want to read comics talk and only comics talk.
The website's comic book resources, right?
It's comic book resources. That's
comic
correct.
Book resources, not stuff that isn't comic book resources.
It's in the title, Paul.
It we is. Actually do. I actually have been talking a little bit more about some comic stuff lately. So, in
so you've like gone against your original
of this,
premise
of this column is not to talk about comics. It's almost like that's the whole point of it.
Talk about whatever we want. Damn it.
I don't know.
In the meantime, so that's you can find that every Sunday at CBR, right there on the front page for Sunday Conversation. Also, head over to ifanboy.com where you can find this show, all of our other shows, including the X-Men Days of Future Past show on the feed behind this one. You can comment on all those shows that ifanboy talk about this week's books. Find out all of our other podcasts, everything going on ifanboy.com.
And follow the action on twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy to find out what the pick of the week is for the show. And you can follow us all individually on Twitter at J.A. Flanagan, C.S. Kilpatrick, and Fuzzy Typewriter.
And if you like us, I mean, like us, you can go over to iTunes where you could leave a rating or a review. As we have now passed the 1,000 mark for ratings, we're currently at 1,012 ratings, and then ratings. An impressive 719 reviews.
I like the latest review, Glasses, Baldy, and Murder, She Wrote Guy.
Robert Kirkman wrote the review? Listen, Josh, I wanted to thank you for coming in this week and sitting in for Jeff, who couldn't make it for personal reasons. And
don't be a stranger.
Your personal schedule. Yeah.
Don't be a stranger.
Really appreciate it.
That's the sound of my teeth grinding together.
All right.
I built this house.
I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.